Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone, and yes, as they say, let's get started. Tonight we have a very interesting guest with us. He is a writer, he is a researcher, and he is also the founder of the Singular 14 Society. That person is Tobias Wayland. What he does is he explores many unusual phenomena as reported to him by witnesses and the commonalities that connect them. From cryptids to UFOs to ghosts to even stranger subjects, he has collected a wide variety of impossible experiences for most persons' debatable interest. While many consider these events to not only exist separately from one another, they actually have much more in common than people think. We had a full program tonight. We talked about a lot of different interests. So therefore, you just sit back and grab that popcorn, because here we go. Welcome my guest, Tobias Wayland.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Tobias, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, love to have you. My goodness. Very short introduction on you, but very interesting and good work that you've been doing. So what I always do, and I'm going to change this up just a little bit, is usually I ask my guests to talk a little bit about their humble beginnings. I think I would like to go into the reverse on you. I would like to find out a little bit about what you're doing right now and a little bit about what you do. And then we're going to start, I think, with humble beginnings. So take it from there.
Sure. So I am the head writer and editor and lead investigator for the Singular 14 Society. Mm-hmm. And the Singular 14 Society is an investigative and journalistic organization that my wife, Emily, and I started back in 2016. And so sort of what we like to do is investigate and write about weird news stories. And that really can run the gamut of paranormal phenomena. We don't necessarily focus on any one particular area, but what we do like to do is focus on the experience. So what a lot of people don't know, or at least a very common question that we receive is, well, why 40? And like, what does 40 mean? Yeah. And for anybody who's not familiar, the word actually comes from Charles Fort, who was an early 20th century collector of weird news stories. And so he would collect all of these strange stories from all over the world, and he would write about them in these comprehensive volumes. And, he would sort of speculate, often very tongue-in-cheek, about various connections or what might be behind them. And And so in that spirit, we do like finding connections when they exist. And frankly, they seem to exist quite a bit.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, so hold your thought right there, because it sounds to me like we're going to talk about quite a few topics tonight. So now let's go back a little bit, because we all want to know, especially those that are real interested in what we do, where did it begin for you? So go back as far as you can remember and tell us a little bit about that journey of yours, and then we'll start digging into some of these topics.
Sure. So, you know, honestly, as far back as I can remember, even as a very young child, I have had anomalous experiences in my life. So some of my earliest memories are of being terrified to go to bed at night, because I knew when I did that there would be something that would come for me. And so now my very earliest memories, you know, are from when I was very young. And so they're not as cohesive, I think, as obviously, you know, more recent memories might be. And so, you know, I do remember as a child, you know, often sleeping with the covers over my head, thinking, as many children do, that would offer me some protection. Mm-hmm. And having something like hands pressing in from the outside, you know, as the blanket is covering me, you know, waking up feeling like something is digging into my ribs or digging underneath me to try to pick me up. And as I grew up, those types of experiences never really stopped, you know? And so from the time that I was really able to form and to maintain more cohesive memories, you know, I've seen shadow people, I've had strange nighttime visitations, you know, heard weird voices, just sort of experiences like that. I can give you a good example.
Yes, please.
This would have been in my early 20s. I was living at home, and I had gone to bed normally this evening, and I woke up, and it was the middle of the night, and this is out in the suburbs, Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. It's a suburb of Madison. Mm-hmm. And so there was some ambient light coming in through my window. You know, I had the blinds shut, but still some light was getting in. It was enough for me to be able to open my eyes and look around and sort of see the contents of my bedroom. And then I look around, and everything's sort of where it's supposed to be. You know, my shelves there are there, and my dresser and everything. And I notice almost immediately, though, that one, there is no immediate reason for me to be awake. Like, there wasn't a loud noise or anything like that woke me up. I was just very suddenly awake, seemingly for no reason. Mm-hmm. And two, I had a very unusual perspective on my room, and it took me a second to figure out why everything just seemed a little bit off. And then I realized that I seemed to be floating several feet above my bed. And as I turned to my left, I saw this shadowy figure. It looked like the completely black silhouette of a man, you know, like a human man. Mm-hmm. And as I'm looking at this thing, I've got the distinct impression that I'm not supposed to be awake for what's happening. Mm. And I wasn't paralyzed or anything. I certainly could move. I did decide in that moment that it probably wasn't a good idea for me to move too much. And so I really just moved my head over and looked at it. And as I did so, it reached its hand out and it placed it on my chest. And I always interpreted that as being comforting, like it was trying to comfort me, as though it too knew that I wasn't supposed to be awake for whatever was happening. And as it did so, I was lowered back down to my bed, and then it just suddenly vanished.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, that was an example of probably one of the more extreme events that I've had in my life, but it's always been things like that. And frankly, that's the reason that I got into this stuff to begin with. You know, back when I first started having things happen to me, you know, there was no internet or anything like that, mm-hmm. Where you could reach out and find like-minded individuals. So right. you know, I discovered relatively early on that there were quite a few authors who would write about stuff like this. And so, you know, I would ride my bike down to the local library, and I would get books by, you know, John Keel and Brad Steiger and Whitley Strieber and Rosemary Ellen Guiley and all of these people who were writing about people just like me who had had these strange experiences. And, you know, I found some comfort in that. You know, people don't have a lot of answers, but just knowing that there were other people out there who had similar experiences and that there were other people who were out there writing about it meant a great deal to me. And honestly, that's a big reason behind why we started the Singular Fortean Society. For me personally, to be able to work with a witness and you know, sort of talk them through their experience, try to be as objective as possible, but in any way I can help them better understand their experience. You know, honestly, even just offer a cathartic release, because so few people, you know, have other folks they can talk to about this stuff. That means a lot to me. You know, it's important to me, and it's really my main motivation for doing what we do.
Interesting. Yeah, I could fill up a bookshelf just behind you here. I've had over 103 experiences, and I have had what I believe to be 3 to 4 extraterrestrial experiences, and all within the last year and a half to 2 years. Not all of them. I mean, I've had over 100 experiences since age. I went back as far as, I guess, age 4 here, but different experiences. This is not like the same type of experience. So the story about you kind of floating up and then having that, did you see a hat on it or not? Or did it just look like the regular kind of a form of a man?
It really looked just like a pure black silhouette of a man. I couldn't see, like, there was no headwear. I couldn't make out like any discernible clothing or equipment or anything like that.
Interesting. And when it touched you, now, did you feel like you were relatively conscious at the time that this experience was happening, or did you say you were kind of in that in-between state?
I felt wide awake.
Wide awake.
I felt like I was as awake then as I am right now.
Interesting. And then when it touched you, did you feel anything like a burning, a tingling, any sensation of that at all? Could you even feel its hand touch you at all?
I could. There was nothing unusual about it. It really just felt like a hand reaching out and touching my chest. And I could feel it as it touched my chest, but there was nothing else unusual about it. And it would have seemed perfectly mundane under any other circumstance.
Did it leave a burn mark or any kind of marking on your body? Did you look at that the next day?
I did. There was nothing unusual in terms of any marking or you know, sudden scars or anything like that.
Was there another light in the room? Forgive my investigation skills here, but it's too natural for me to just go. I'm just trying to think about, I'm trying to put together the pieces as to whether you had some kind of, I like to separate paranormal and extraterrestrial. I know everybody else likes to bunch it all together. I know that, but I just feel it's easier for me because people know when I'm talking about aliens or something, you know, multiverse or whatever, versus, you know, something paranormal to me seems like other people's deceased people, you know, that kind of thing, or other beings. Did this sense to you at all? Did you classify it in your mind or categorize it as paranormal, extraterrestrial? What were you thinking back then?
You know, at the time, you know, I'd had so many similar strange experiences, seeing shadow people, you know, hearing weird voices and things of that nature, that it was already difficult at that time for me to try to classify it. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, specifically at the time, I didn't know what to make of it at all, you know. And given the authors that I had been reading, that I, you know, grew up reading, you know, it didn't really jump out to me as any particular, you know, aspect. Now I've since talked to witnesses who have had similar experiences while living in a house that they thought was haunted. You know,
right.
I've talked to people who have had alien abduction experiences, you know, with some stark similarities. And so I find it today just as baffling. You know, I think that the event itself, depending on the lens through which you're viewing it, you know, could be just as easily viewed as being paranormal or you know, extraterrestrial or you know, whatever particular thing someone is interested in. I myself I'm at the point now where I kind of just hold off on classifying it. Back then, you know, specifically, I couldn't, you know, it was one of those things where I thought about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, because my whole life I've been trying to figure out what any of this stuff was. You know, I used to have terrible nightmares about being taken out of my bed and see, you know, images of what people, you know, commonly describe as like gray aliens, mm-hmm. You know, often like floating right above my bed. And so the idea that it could have been some kind of physical abduction experience or, you know, something similar to that, is not something that I would disregard.
Right.
Or, you know, I think that that's very much on the table. You know, I very much seem to be physically floating above my bed, because that's something people commonly ask me, or they'll assume it was some kind of like astral projection or, mm-hmm. or something similar. And it wasn't, not from my perspective. I was physically floating, you know, 2 or 3 feet above my bed. You know, it's not like I looked down and saw my body there or anything. Like, no, that's where I was.
Question. It's bringing up a similar situation I had, which, by the way, I thought was all paranormal at the time. And now after speaking with another guest, I'm reevaluating maybe what was happening. Question. When you were going back down to the bed, did I hear you correctly that it kind of took its hand and then just kind of pushed you right back down to the bed? You saw yourself, you felt yourself floating up, and then this hand was kind of pushing you like back down. Am I correct on that?
Well, I didn't interpret it that way. Now, when I was floating, I mm-hmm. was stationary.
Yes.
And so it didn't feel like I was still rising up. So if you can imagine just floating stationary above your bed.
Okay.
You look over to your left and you see this thing.
Yeah.
And then it reaches its hand out and like puts it on your chest.
Yes.
And then at that point, I was lowered back down, but it didn't feel like a lot of pressure from the hand as though it was pushing me.
Yes.
It was more just sort of resting its hand on my chest, and then I was lowered down.
Okay. And the reason why I asked that, thank you for clarifying that. The reason why I asked that is that I had an experience out near Groveland or Yosemite National Park in a hotel called Groveland Hotel. And my intention of going in there at the time, of course, was to stay in the haunted room, but I stayed in the room down the hallway, which, by the way, was probably more haunted than the one that it's famous for. And I was during the middle of the night. Well, it's about, what was it, 12, 1, 2 o'clock a.m., maybe it's 3. I can't remember anymore, but it was in that line. It was a very clear night, et cetera, et cetera. And I found myself waking up suddenly, bouncing on the bed, okay, with my back. And I could have sworn, and to this day, I still kind of go under the theory of the miner that liked to hide under the bed and steal the remotes and steal people's socks and all this sort of thing. Didn't like people that snored in that room. And of course, I'm a big snorer when you lay me flat. And so anyway, I found myself feeling what felt like a footprint or foot underneath the middle of my back and just kind of airlifted, kicked me up about maybe 1 or 2 feet. And then I started bouncing on the bed. Now, when I had a conversation about this very same story with another guest who does missing people and reports these disappearances out in these national parks, all of a sudden we kind of thought together there might have been the possibility that I could have had some kind of an abduction and I was just being thrown back down on the bed, you know, or brought back down. Well, in my case, good luck in getting me through the ceiling of anything. But that's what I was just curious about with whether you felt like you were bouncing on the bed or anything like that. But now I understand how you felt with your body being more stationary and being there. So that's very interesting. Did you say you're in your 20s when this happened?
Yeah, I was in my early 20s. I would have been right around 21. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned bouncing off the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I spoke to an alien abduction experiencer in Janesville, Wisconsin, not that long ago. It would have been just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And she described actually towards the end of her experience, basically, if we have time, I can go through.
Oh, we have time.
Happened to her.
Oh, no. So, yeah.
Okay, great. So she had fallen asleep on the couch in her apartment. Again, this is in Janesville, Wisconsin. And she woke up because she noticed there was some light coming through their front door. So there's a little partition that means you can't actually see the front door from the living room, but right. She could tell there was some light coming through there and she knew her roommate wasn't home. And so she thought, well, hey, maybe it's my roommate coming home. Like, I'll go see, you know, what's going on. You know, maybe I can let her in. And then she said that, so she gets up off the couch and she starts to walk over there and she gets like halfway there. And then she starts thinking, well, what if it's a burglar? Well, I better go check and see if the door is locked or something. And she gets around this partition and she sees what she described as sort of a traditional gray alien. So you've got this thing with a small body and a large head and these huge black eyes. And interestingly, she said that she screamed because, of course, like she's immediately startled. She's terrified. Mm-hmm. But then when she screamed, she said the thing also screamed. So it had this weird, like bird-like scream, like in response to her. And so she takes off running, like she's running across the living room trying to get away. And she says she was struck by this like magnetic beam, like this blue beam that sort of paralyzed her, you know, it caused her to sort of like tingle all over, paralyzed her, picks her up and starts floating her back over to the sofa. And the whole time she's thinking to herself, you know, look, and honestly, this was very interesting because as she explained it to me, she wasn't even sure why she was thinking this at the time. It really only made sense in hindsight, but the whole time this is happening, she's thinking, you know, this is real. They're going to try to make you think it was a dream, but this isn't a dream. This is real.
Right.
And she's floated back over to the couch. And at that point, she's dropped suddenly back down onto the couch. And when she hits the couch, that's when she's no longer paralyzed. And she described it as waking up. But, you know, I really pressed her on this because I wanted to be sure what her experience was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't waking up from sleep necessarily. What she was trying to describe was the effect of suddenly no longer being held by this beam. And so she hits the couch and bounces off of it. And suddenly she's, you know, she's free and the light is gone. There's no beings, you know, nothing is there and everything is suddenly peaceful and quiet. But I was just instantly reminded of that hearing your story about bouncing off the bed.
Oh yeah. I've got stories that would blow your mind. You know, and I'll never really know. Now, when that happened, though, I do need to add, because I get people asking me this all the time. Well, your husband was right next to you in bed. Did he wake up when you were bouncing on the bed? And I said, no, he did not. But this would be very typical and common of the types of situations that I have. Because I've been in many situations where he has been next to me, either on a couch or here in bed or this or that or whatever. And these experiences are happening to me. And I'm literally trying to wake him up and he won't wake up. And it's almost like he's in, like what they say, the dead of sleep. Well, my husband wakes up at the ting of a dime, because I don't have to even touch him, you know, anytime. I just say his name and he just kind of wakes up. He would not wake up. When I finally got him to wake up, though, I told him, I said, oh my God, I was just bouncing on the bed. I said, oh, I must have really ticked off this minor or something. And I said, I felt the foot. But these things, when it's happening to you, you try to rationalize them into people think you're crazy. So let me shoot this right back in your shoes now. Okay, so you've had this experience. Did that start off your journey with more experiences?
Well, you know, I can't say that my experiences accelerated after that or anything, mm-hmm. because they had been fairly constant up to that point. And you know, the stuff that I experienced as a little kid, even, you know, remembering the hands pressing into my sides or feeling like I was being lifted up, that never really went away. It's just like I said before, when I was a little kid, you know, memory is tricky, and trying to remember things from when you were 2, 3, 4 years old, because it really has been going on for that long, is very difficult. You really just get little snippets of memories rather than like long cohesive narratives to go by. Yeah. I have continuously had experiences since. Actually, you know, speaking of not waking up your spouse, there have been a couple of times when Emily and I have been in bed. These were fairly recent, within the past probably year or two, mm-hmm. Actually probably 2 years. I forget how long ago we actually bought our house. It doesn't seem like that long, but it's actually been, you know, over a year now. But this was back when we had our apartment in Madison. Yeah. Now, one night, again, I went to, and it always, you know, it starts with me going to bed under perfectly normal circumstances. You know, I don't feel a feeling of dread necessarily. You know, I just went to bed. I shouldn't say it always starts with me going to bed, because I've had experiences where I was just up and awake and doing other stuff. But for these two in particular, you know, I had just gone to bed normally. And the first one, I remember, I was having this really strange dream about being abducted, basically, you know, by aliens. And so I was having this dream, and I woke up suddenly. And when I woke up, I couldn't move. And there was this light shining directly in my eye. It actually really reminded me of, you know, like when you go to the optometrist and they shine that super bright light in your eye and they try to get it really close to your eye. Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, it reminded me of that more than anything. You know, and so it was the weirdest thing. And so I wake up, I've got this super bright light shining directly into my eyes, and there's no light that would have been present, that could have been present.
Was it evening?
That would have been that bright.
Was this was evening?
It was nighttime.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it was middle of the night. We don't sleep with any lights on. There's no lights that would have been outside of our window that could have shined directly into my eyes like that. Mm. You know, it really was like if somebody just had a flashlight shining it directly into my eyes for some reason. And it was another one of those experiences where I woke up and I felt very strongly that I wasn't supposed to be awake for this. And so like, I wake up, I've got this light shining directly in my eyes. And I just feel this drowsiness come over me. You know, I get the feeling I'm not supposed to be awake. And as soon as I do, it's almost like I'm being anesthetized and just put right back to sleep. And then The other experience where, you know, Emily was sleeping next to me, I woke up one night. Now Emily talks in her sleep sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I woke up one night to her talking in a very agitated manner. So I wasn't sure what was going on, but it woke me up, and I roll over and I look at her and I say, you know, sweetheart, is everything okay? Mm-hmm. And it took me, you know, 3 seconds to figure out that she was just talking in her sleep. Yeah. So she was fine, you know, like nothing was going on. I don't know what she was dreaming about. And so, you know, realizing everything is fine, I go, okay, well, great. I'm going to go back to sleep. And so I roll over onto my stomach, and I've got my head looking to my left, which is a pretty natural way for me to sleep, you know? And as I lie down, I see this hand, and it looked like this sort of black, sort of scaly, almost like flaky hand, you know, maybe it was either, you know, scaled or had extremely bad eczema or something similar. Yeah, yeah. And I see it reach around the side of my head. And now I can move, like I'm not paralyzed at all. Mm-hmm. And at the same time I see that hand, I feel that old familiar feeling from when I was a kid of hands digging into my sides and trying to get under me as though I'm about to be lifted up. And so I freak out like immediately and start flailing behind me. And what's interesting is when I'm slapping frantically at these hands, I can feel them. I can feel that I'm connecting with something while I do that.
Yeah.
And as I do it, the hand that was reaching around the front, just in the exact opposite motion, like recedes. And then when it's out of my line of sight, I can't see it anymore. At that point, the other hands just disappear and I'm suddenly hitting air.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Emily, of course, slept through the entire thing.
Oh yeah. No, they don't wake up. I mean, that's why I find that part to be even actually more fascinating than the horror that we go through. So of course, someone's going to ask you if you ate mushrooms that night or something like that. But that's actually quite scary and puzzling, because if I were to slap things back like that, at least in the direction that I think you're talking about, my hand would probably hit, well, at least the bed frame or the wall or something. Was it behind you, did you say, or coming over like this?
See, now I'm on my stomach. And so while I'm on my stomach, I'm looking to my left. I see a hand go like this. Okay. But at the same time, I can feel other hands like digging under me as though to lift me up. And so since I'm on my back, what I'm doing is I'm slapping behind me and like hitting these hands. And so there's no bed frame or, you know, or anything nearby for me to hit other than those hands, because it would have been, you know, there was a blanket, but like that's it. And my arms were on top of the blanket. So they weren't underneath it.
Have you ever had any dreams with reptilians or mantis beings in them?
No. Interestingly, I have not. Now, that's something, you know, that is pretty commonly reported, these different type of beings, you know. And I guess you could argue that black hand that I saw, you know, could have been reptilian or something similar. But generally, when I have dreams that involve alien beings, they are almost always what you would conceive of as like a typical sort of gray alien.
Interesting. Have you ever taken a black light to your body to check to see if anything or anything might glow to see if you have an implant?
That I have not done. You know, like I mentioned before, I guess that was about that one particular experience, but just in general, I haven't noticed many mysterious scars or marks or anything. I've had nosebleeds before, but I can't correlate those necessarily with any particular experience. So, you know, there's nothing to say that they couldn't possibly, you know, just be natural, normal nosebleeds that people get from time to time. So no, you know, I haven't looked into anything like that. It's probably worthwhile. I don't know, since it it's been long enough since my last experience. I don't know that there would be, you know, any sort of evidence like that left to find.
Well, a lot of times too, some of these things are cloaked. So even if you had an implant or anything in you, it just depends on where it would be positioned. And then also a lot of times too, they don't always necessarily show up unless something weird happens. I'm thinking of a little boy who went to the dentist, and he seemed okay, but they found something that looked like a BB gun bullet, just lodged somewhere near or just underneath one of his teeth. And they had asked the parent if he had accidentally been shot with a BB gun, you know, and all that kind of, and it that one showed up. And then I don't know if they dug it out or what, they would have to probably remove the tooth. But the thing is, it's like some of these things will show and some of these things will not show. They will be cloaked. Just like when we talk about UFO crafts, I just got done talking with a guest that was on my show who with the naked eye could not see a UFO craft out in the tree line. He lives up somewhere in Idaho. But the minute he put up the military binoculars, you know, those military goggles, there it was sitting right there. But when you take them down, can't see it. When you put that thing up, hello, there I am. And so there's things out there that we'll never be able to put our finger on or see. But tell us another interesting story that you can think about, that you can share with us, any subject you might have.
Well, you know, I honestly, that story that you just mentioned about the gentleman's experience out in Idaho, mm-hmm. it reminds me of something that happened to us when we were out in the Kettle Moraine State Forest. Mm-hmm. And so we were out there with, it was Emily, myself, and we were out there with our friend Jay Bachochin, who does a lot of work investigating cryptid sightings and UFO sightings and stuff in that area. And so he had set up these night vision binoculars.
Yeah.
And well, just prior to that, because we are willing to try anything really in mm-hmm. terms of our investigations, we had decided that particular night we were in a good spot for sky watching, and we were going to try a CE5.
Yeah.
Session. And so we did it by the book. You know, I just downloaded the app and, you know, gave Dr. Greer $10, and I went through everything just as, you know, as it was laid out. And so we listened to all the tones and did the meditation and everything else. And I didn't know what to expect. I had zero expectations going into this, but at that point, I had a feeling that, you know, consciousness was a very important aspect of these phenomena, not just, you know, otherworldly beings or aliens, but, you know, maybe a lot of other, you know, potentially paranormal phenomena. And so, you know, we had gone through all of these steps, and that's when, after we were done, Jay noticed something strange through the binoculars. So again, you know, these are night vision binoculars. And so they're seeing things in IR, and he, you know, he calls us over and he's just kind of like, hey guys, you should take a look at this. I want to see if you're seeing what I'm seeing. And so there's no craft visible to the naked eye, but we look through the IR binoculars and suddenly, yeah, there's this ball of light. And so, you know, we're pretty experienced investigators in terms of, you know, at least being familiar with the basic things you would rule out. And so, you know, obviously it wasn't, you know, an insect or, you know, dust or anything similar, because the flight pattern of this object, it reminded me, you know, honestly, if I had seen it with my naked eye, I might've thought it was a helicopter.
Right.
Or, you know, some other kind of aircraft,
right.
Because, you know, it was flying low to the tree line, but it was otherwise flying in a straight line. Mm-hmm. And we're looking, and I'm luckily recording all of this. So you can see, you know, like the image in the IR or the craft or the object or whatever it was, and then see me recording the skyline, and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that should be showing up, at least nothing in the visible light spectrum for us, you know. And you know, I, after going back and watching it again, I think there might have actually been two separate things present, because after this thing sort of like goes, you know, and disappears by some other trees, there's another light that at the time when I was watching it, you know, with the naked eye, mm-hmm. I thought it was the same, but I don't think it actually was, because going back and watching the recording, you can see the one object kind of go through the trees. And then there's a second object, which is even weirder, because its flight path doesn't mimic anything you would expect from any normal aircraft.
Right.
So it's sort of sitting there, and it like gets bright and then gets dim and then drops down and then gets bright and gets dim and like disappears or something.
Right.
And I'm glad that we're always recording everything, because, you know, human perception can be flawed, and being able to go back and look at things a second time is invaluable in terms of trying to understand them. But yeah, that was, I mean, just something I was instantly reminded of. Now, we've had a lot of interesting experiences out in the Kettle Moraine State Forest. We've been going out there with Jay since probably 2018, wow. 2019, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a lot of anomalous light activity. Yeah. You know, we've seen strange, you know, figures. Now, this is an area that is renowned sort of for its Bigfoot sightings and its dogman sightings. You know, it's really what it's known for. And there are lots of witnesses in that area who have talked about encountering like those types of beings. And I haven't seen anything that I would definitively say had to be a Bigfoot, but I've seen something that was huge and bipedal and looked like it was moving pretty quickly. So
what,
you know,
state, what state was maybe. This again? What state is that?
So this in?
This
is in Wisconsin.
Okay. Got
like
it.
Southeastern Wisconsin. There's the Kettle Moraine State Forest, and it's, you know, honestly, it's kind of broken up into a bunch of different forests. It's like, it's really just like a line of forests that kind of goes up mm-hmm. the eastern, you know, part of the state. But it is, you know, an area where people have reported a lot of cryptid sightings, you know, Bigfoot, yes. Dogman. There are even like Goatman or Little People sightings. So all kinds of weird stuff. But then you also have this anomalous light phenomenon that people report in the same areas. And so there's a correlation there. I mean, correlation doesn't mean causation necessarily, of course, as we all know, but it's interesting to me, you know, because you have this additional phenomenon, this anomalous phenomenon happening in the same geographic area. So I'm not ready to say that they aren't related, but I'm also not ready to say that they are or even how they possibly could be. It's just very fascinating to me.
Well, you know, the thing when you bring this up, I know that I'm going to have on the show, I can't remember, maybe I think they're coming well before you, but we have a, you know, up in upper Minnesota, you know, we've got a lot of thick forest up there. And so we have been told anyway, or researchers have discovered that there is some kind of Bigfoot activity up there. But there was a story that one of my guests gave, and they're going to be on the show shortly here visually on the TV show and then also on the podcast. But something to do with there's a correlation between the Bigfoot findings sometimes and these blue lights that seem to show up over these marshes that most people cannot step into because it's kind of like quicksand. I mean, if you step into it, you might not ever get out of it. And so there, you have to really understand your terrain before you start tromping around in places that you could ultimately never come back out of again. But, you know, I've heard of a variety of Bigfoot stories. everything from, and I've shared this on the show a couple times now, so for those of you watching, you're going to hear it again. Everything from this gentleman that lived out in the forest in kind of a cabin-like home, and he was aware that a Bigfoot was coming more near his house. And one day he did see the Bigfoot come out of the forest, and it was entering or coming towards the door of his house. So he grabbed his shotgun and he said, there's got to protect whatever I can. And just about 5 feet, 10 feet before the Bigfoot actually came that close to the house, he opens up the door, cocks his thing back, of course, and shoots right at the Bigfoot. Well, it went poof. Some people wonder why there's not enough evidence left of Bigfoot, and there's lots of reasons as to all of this and additionally, but it always, and this apparently is a true story, and it's, so it's like it went poof, like nothing, like it just disappeared. So I do believe that there might be some unusual connection between these propelled anomaly type of lights, or whatever you want to call them, and these cryptids. You brought up Dogman. I want to talk to you a little bit about Dogman, because that one is terrifying. I have heard of some reports of Dogman being seen somewhere in Wisconsin, but Dogman is also seen in other places. So what do you do? And help us out, or help the listeners and the viewers out here a little bit about this Dogman. Tell us a little bit about what you know.
Sure. So, well, in Wisconsin specifically, I think arguably the most famous Dogman sightings would have been the Beast of Bray Road sightings back in the 90s. And those were famously covered by journalist and paranormal investigator researcher Linda Godfrey. She did a great job. You know, anybody who really wants to learn just about everything there is to know about those particular sightings absolutely should look into Linda's work. And she's got a number of excellent books about them. But yeah, I mean, basically what it boils down to are a variety of different people have claimed to see these bipedal, canine beings that, are seemingly biologically impossible.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to reconcile any kind of canine species, with the anthropomorphic elements that right. people describe. But the one caveat there, of course, is that, and yet here we are with some very serious, credible people right. who have had these sightings. So we have to ask ourselves, what exactly are they seeing, right. and the sightings in Wisconsin are largely in the southern to southeastern portions of the state. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, my wife and I moved to a little village, maybe 40 minutes south of Madison. Mm-hmm. And Lon Strickler contacted me to let me know that he had found a Dogman sighting that ended up being maybe a half mile from our house.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like I drive by the location of the sighting, like every week
day.
To go to the grocery store. Yeah, it's like right there. And so, yeah, it's something that's fairly prolific, in terms of reported activity down here. The sightings themselves, tend to be pretty similar to other cryptid sightings, where they're pretty quick usually. Often people are just out going about their business, yep. often driving, maybe hiking or something.
Right.
And they see this thing and it doesn't last very long. It's usually running or something, or sometimes the witness is running because they feel threatened or something similar. Mm-hmm. And the descriptions are fairly consistent of, a humanoid with canine features, sometimes glowing red eyes or something similar.
Right.
And they take place in the same areas as you know, Bigfoot sightings or some of the UFO activity that I've touched on, you know. So I'm not necessarily craft, you know, per se, you know, it's not the same areas where, you know, maybe people are reporting like flying saucers or definitive craft as much as weird lights. Yeah. And so those weird lights could represent a lot of different stuff, you know, but yeah, so in the same areas that people see weird balls of light, very similar to what I and Emily and Jay and some of our other friends have seen out in the Kettle Moraine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like I said, it's an interesting correlation. Certainly there are a lot of different hypotheses that people have regarding, you know, what the relationship, if any, might be. You know, some of the interesting ones that I've heard, well, you know, maybe arguably the most interesting one is sort of the, well, there's actually two, sorry. So, you know, if you read a lot of John Keel or something, you know, he sort of had this idea of ultra-terrestrials. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he speculated about, you know, was these balls of light that would often be reported in the same area as weird creature sightings and so on. What if the creature is a projection, yeah, and the ball of light is the actual entity, you know, like it's the real thing.
Correct.
Yeah. It's the actual being, but everything else is just a weird projection. And then you've got other people who think that it's possible that those balls of light are a sort of, like epiphenomenon, like there's something that happens as a result of, you know, say like interdimensional travel or travel from a parallel universe or something similar, you know, sort of like, you know, sparks from a flame, mm-hmm, where you have this other weird thing happening and the lights are sort of a result of that, you know, and those are two, you know, pretty high strangeness hypotheses that I've heard to explain those lights being in the same areas, you know, as the Bigfoot and Dogman, you know, sightings. And maybe, you know, I think they're certainly very interesting and worth our time, at least in terms of speculation.
You know, when you bring up these balls of light, of course, the big question is I've got infrared cameras in my house that capture these things all the time, and they are not, I'm a professional photographer. I understand photography very, very well. I understand filters and what they can do to your photos and stuff like that. But have you ever seen within your own, I'd be curious, within your own houses, that you've been in, have you ever had an infrared light system, night light type thing going, and have you ever seen these propelling balls of light and things that are whipping around at angles and all that? Have you ever noted that, or don't you notice that where you're living?
So, you know, we do have in IR camera, we have a like a Furbo pet camera in our living room. Yeah. And, you know, it'll shoot in night vision and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen anything on it that couldn't have been an insect. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things for me, you know, especially when it comes to cameras like that, if like a witness comes to me, for instance, I always ask them if they saw it with the naked eye too, mm-hmm, because if they didn't, that always introduces a sort of element of doubt, only because what, and I'm sure you know this, but for anybody out there who doesn't, what happens with these IR cameras is they shoot this infrared light out. Right. And it bounces off of stuff, and insects are very reflective. Mm-hmm. And so it'll bounce off these insects, and they'll light up like the sun in this IR camera. And they'll look like little balls of light, but if you were looking in the same area, you wouldn't see them.
Right.
And so, you know, I haven't seen anything like on our cameras that couldn't be that. The big difference, and I should backtrack a second, because there might be some people going out there, you know, sitting out there going, well, you know, you guys were in the Kettle Moraine State Forest and you saw this UFO through IR binoculars. Mm-hmm. Now, and you're telling me that you couldn't see it with the naked eye. So what makes that different? Well, what made it different was the behavior of the object through the IR binoculars, you know, where you've got this steady light that, you know, goes to blinking and it's moving in a very straight, steady flight path, which is, it didn't behave like any insect would ever behave, basically. And it was there too long. It was too bright. There are a lot of comparisons that could be made. And so, like, that was one instance where, you know, certainly I believe it to be something anomalous, but it's good to know this kind of stuff, because without knowing sort of how they function and how to spot stuff like that, you wouldn't be able to rule it out as an explanation.
You had written a book now. I believe it's called something with, I can't remember the title exactly, but you talk about Mothman. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that book?
Okay, sure. So this was from 2019. We published the Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. And what that book is the culmination of about 2.5 years of research and investigation at that point, looking into winged humanoid sightings all around Lake Michigan. And so the sightings sort of ostensibly began in the spring of 2017, but as in the Chicago area specifically. But as the investigation went on, you know, we would get reports from other areas, you know, spreading out in Illinois, but then also from Indiana and Wisconsin, yeah. Even one or two from Michigan proper there. Mm-hmm. And we would get reports, you know, going back much earlier than we had supposed that the phenomenon was occurring as well. I mean, to date, I think the oldest report I've received is from 1957.
Is this in Michigan?
This was actually from central Illinois, maybe a couple hours south of Chicago.
Okay.
And so that predates the Point Pleasant sightings, you know, by a decade or so, maybe slightly less than a decade. Yeah. So it's been interesting, you know. This is something that that Emily and I have been working on with like Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters, mm-hmm. and Manuel Navarrete of UFO Clearinghouse, and there have been a number of other interested parties as well. Mm-hmm. You know, who have all contributed to this investigation. And so at the time of its writing, you know, we were nearing, I think, the midway point to the end of 2019. And it captures the vast majority, you know, of that investigation. Now, certainly things have happened since, and I've included everything that we've investigated, you know, since then in Strange Tales of the Impossible, which was the follow up, you know, my second book, and so that does include more stuff. But to really want to for anybody who wants to understand the Lake Michigan Mothman phenomenon, you know, because probably most people have heard about winged humanoid reports coming, you know, from Chicago specifically. They might not be aware that they're being reported in other areas around Lake Michigan too. But anybody who really wants to understand those sightings and what went into investigating them, and, you know, who were some of the witnesses, like who was willing to come forward and actually, you know, and actually tell their story and similar, then you really want to look at the Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest, because I really tried to do a very comprehensive job of including everything that went into that investigation. Now, not all of the reports are created equal. Like, that's just a fact. Some of them, there wasn't able to be a lot of follow-up, but other, you know, reports had a great deal of follow-up with witnesses who were very forthcoming and very willing to, you know, let us go out to the sighting area and even show us around, you know, with whom we were able to communicate extensively to really try to understand their experience. And so I think it's important for people to know and to actually have access to this information so they can say, okay, well, maybe this report might have been a misidentified bird or something, but this other report, it's far too strange and it's far too credible, you know, to just be written off because of everything that was able to go into investigating it.
Tell us a little bit about these books that you've written and then how people can find them and then how they can find you if they want to do a report with you on something unusual. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Everybody should be somewhat familiar with the Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. My follow-up book was Strange Tales of the Impossible, which just came out last year. And while there are winged humanoid reports in it, it also covers a much wider range of reported phenomena. So it's got everything from ghosts and hauntings to UFOs to alien abduction to weird cryptid sightings and even stranger stuff. And it sort of makes connections between those seemingly disparate phenomena, but maybe, you know, they're a little more connected than we like to think. And so you can get those books. You can get them on Amazon, of course. If you want them signed, you can order them directly through our website, which is singular40in.com. You can always keep up with us there as well. So if you would like to make your own report, if something strange has happened to you, you can contact us through the website. You can email us at info@singular40in.com. Or, you know, follow us on social media. You can always get a hold of us through social media as well. So you can follow the Singular 40 in Society on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of the sort of standard social media platforms that people use. And if you have, you know, a strange experience, I hope you'll reach out to us.
Thank you. Wow. I think that very interesting. This hour plus has really flown by, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to have you on again in the late future so we can figure out if you've got another book out there that you have or some more interesting stories or things that are happening to you. Because something tells me, it's not over with yet. And that's the most fascinating thing about being in this field. So thank you so much, Tobias, for being on the show this evening.